This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Welcome to the Cowboys Podcast.
Dallas Cowboys trying to rally from behind. It's Hill! Touchdown! Big opening for Tony Dorsett. Look out! He's got great speed. Dorsett down the sideline. Stays in bounds.
Can you believe that?
That was a heck of a throw by Troy Aikman. Everyone had to do it. Someone had to call it. But the other guys had to make it go.
It's Elliott. Elliott for the touchdown. No flags. Cowboys lead.
Des Bryant out of the witness protection program and trying for the end zone.
How about them Cowboys?
Touchdown, Dallas.
Now your host, Jono, Steve-O, and Rodney.
One, two, three, Cowboys!
Cowboy Nation. Hey, how's everybody doing out there in Cowboy Land? It's Steve-O. No Jono today. He's getting x-rays on his chest. I don't even know what that means. He's got like the whooping cough.
And he's a little under the weather.
We got Rodney in here.
What's going on?
Well, it's a week since our Facebook Live show. We didn't come back. And, you know, it's a tough when you get thrown off by that schedule and everything like that. I won't say thrown off. I like the primetime games, but... we kind of call an audible, if you will, Omaha, something like that. And we don't do a Monday show because we went live. Today's show is going to do a little recap of the Redskins, you know, the ass whooping we put on them. And then we'll preview the ass whooping we're going to put on the G-men, right?
All right, well, let's do it.
Does that sound good to you?
I can make that work.
Can
you? We'll wing it. I mean, we don't really know what we're talking about as we go.
Well, here's it.
We'll get to the finish line eventually.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, here's the deal. It's not going to be a long show, I'm sure, about 45 minutes. But at the end of the day, we wing it every time we come in.
Yeah, it's no different.
Because, folks, this is a fan show, okay? We're just two normal dudes that watch the game on TV.
We don't have producers and interns feeding us full of stats. And
no, not anymore. We tried that once, and I thought it actually worked out fairly well when we tried it. But
yeah, no, it would. I mean, yeah. It would be helpful, yeah. But that's the point, though. Sure. You know, we're fans, right? Yeah.
Rodney and I just got done eating lunch. Delicious. What we call our pre-show meeting.
Our production meeting, right?
And it sounded a lot like what we're going to talk about for the next 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, this is it literally what we do all the time.
Yep. Which is the way we prefer to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of fun that we have at lunch. Then we come in here and we'll kind of regurgitate some of the stuff we talked about, and we'll kind of look at each other like maybe we should explain that a little bit more. But let's hop right into it. Rodney, take us through the Washington Redskins game a little bit about what you saw.
Sure. So, I mean, what the first thing that as we're watching it, Washington gave us four turnovers. That to me was the difference, because if you look at Dak's stat line, it was less than impressive yet again. I think if we took a look, I'll just give you the stat line. He was 11 for 22 for 102. He did have two touchdowns, but, it, you know, just 11 for 22, 102. If you knew that before the game started, would you have thought we had won the game?
No.
Probably not, right? We would think, well, shoot, Dak struggled again, and, you know, he's continuing, you know, this downward spiral that he's been in the last few weeks. But our defense stepped up for us, created four turnovers, which was, I mean, huge, huge. I mean, that's the difference in the game. And then Alfred Morris ran it really well.
Yeah,
and he stuck it to his former team. But you know what the thing of it is that he ran the ball well, but that's our identity. Now, granted, we would prefer to have Zeke back there doing that, and we're a better team with him, but that was still our identity, running the ball, controlling it a little bit, getting a fortunate turnover here and there, and then creating off of that.
And staying with the run. I don't know if you recall. I think he got a lot of those yards kind of middle to late in the game.
Sure.
By sticking with it, the offensive line, what we call a lot of time, warmed up, right?
Yeah.
Got it going. And but back to the Prescott thing. It's got to be alarming.
It is.
To be 11 for 22 for 102 yards. That's got to be. I don't really care if you win 63 to nothing and, you know, they can't stop your run, you got to throw more than 100 yards.
Yes.
I mean, most of these guys do that in their sleep, mm-hmm. in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a quarterback-driven league. I don't know how to really feel about it because I love the fact that we have a running game identity. But at the end of the day, your quarterback has to be able to put the team on his back and carry them as well. If you don't have that, I don't know if you're going to have the success in this league to win a championship.
It would be tough because at some point in time during any long season and a playoff run, you're going to face adversity where things aren't going well for you. You're behind late in the fourth quarter, or you started kind of flat and you've got to make a comeback in the second quarter or early in the second half. And you've got to be able to have all aspects of your game working. And so, if this continues, I hate to say it, but, you know, the season's – we're already on the brink of not being on the playoffs anyway. Like our chances are pretty slim. We still have a chance. But it's – you know, we've – all aspects of it have to be better.
That's – but that's my fear. I mean
– yeah.
Is the fact that you look at it – and Morris didn't have 227 yards or 297 yards. He had 200 – or 127.
Right.
Which is, what we deem a very good game in the NFL. Not an exceptional game. Not one that it looked like you would ride him like Secretariat.
Right.
But where is the passing for Dak? Where is that? Cousins threw for 251 by himself there.
Yeah.
And we were all over him.
Right.
And he doesn't have exceptional players, offensive weapons.
Right.
You know, I mean, I would think that you would look at our offensive weapons and say, boy, I'd take those any day of the week,
God, yeah.
Twice on Sundays, three sure. times on Thursday nights, and if you get a Monday night game.
We'll take it there, too.
Take it there, too.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. It's alarming. It's a trend that's been going in the wrong direction. But ultimately, you know, when it comes down to it, why did we get away with Dak having a poor game? Well, it's because the Redskins gave us the ball four
right.
times. And now, don't get me wrong, like our defense had to create some pressure.
I'm trying to remember how much pressure they had or if it was kind of a, you know, he kind of ran into the back of one of his guys and kind of got hit. There and it really was not a massive, it was one of the luck of the draw
sure.
type fumbles there. But if you remember right, when Dak started, I mean, it was he couldn't find the strike zone. He was spiking balls into the ground.
Yeah.
The balls were, I mean, he had a 3 or 4 yard little dump off.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he threw it. I mean, he hit the bull. I mean, if we were watching Bull Durham, he would have hit the bull.
The bull.
I mean, it's crazy.
No, it is. And that was actually the one I was going to reference is because his footwork was horrible. Now, he did have a little bit of pressure in the pocket where he stepped up. And I don't remember who the receiver was, but you're exactly right. It was just like a 3 or 4 yard route as the receiver was working his way towards the sideline. And Dak stepped up and threw it. And, I mean, it looked like a dying quail, to use another Bull Durham reference. It looked like a duck.
Texas leaguer.
Texas leaguer.
C&I ground ball.
You know, ground ball with eyes.
Yeah.
We can just quote Bull Durham for 45 minutes probably and get away with it.
Well, I mean, this is a football show.
Yeah,
we need to go with, like, Remember the Titans or Varsity Blues?
Yeah,
or,
yeah, maybe.
What was the teacher's name in Varsity Blues? It was the dancer. If Jono was in here, hashtag no Jono. No, he would have been like, you're at the 8:55 mark. Let's make sure we cut that one out.
Mm-hmm.
Non-edited. Exactly. This will not be edited today, folks.
Sorry. Anyway, to get back on track, it's alarming. It's going in the wrong direction. And what do we do to fix it, though? I mean, you can't – there's not really a quarterback change you can make right now. Or maybe, or do you? But, I mean, I'd have a hard time doing it. I don't know. Would you?
No.
I wouldn't either. No, I don't even think it's really on the table.
I'm not making a quarterback change at all. But what I am concerned about is this the sophomore slump that we kind of alluded to at the end of last year, beginning of this year, you know, during the offseason while we talked Cowboys podcast. We were afraid of a sophomore slump.
Yeah. Right.
Is this it where, you know, he's going to have to go back? So I was just reading something. I'm in a fantasy football league with a lot of these guys here at Lineup Media Group. And somebody's trying to trade me, you know, off season for a minor leaguer who got drafted. He was 18 years old, can't get a fastball by him. So they heavy diet of off-speed pitches later in the season. Slumping numbers are down during the offseason. He has to go and he has to learn how to hit that. He's going to have to adjust to the adjustment. And that's what Dak Prescott, and I'm sorry for being long-winded with drawing that line, but Dak's going to have to do the same thing. He came in hot as a firecracker, hot as a pistol last year, right?
You know, everything went right for him. All the stars aligned last year for him in the success of forgive me, I know we talked about it, but in a way, he came out of college as a system quarterback.
Right.
And last year's system, last year's team, was perfect for him to fall right into, clearly. And now, you know, there's been a few changes on the offensive line here and there. We still have the same weapons, but the chemistry is just not the same. And I think, I guess you almost have to, I mean, at some point in time, that blame, there's a piece of it that goes on everybody. Football is probably the ultimate team sport, but clearly there's something off with Dak. Is it the play calling that's just not, you know, the coaches aren't
accentuating his talents?
Yeah, putting him in the best position to be successful. Is it that sophomore slump where now he had a full season of being the man. He had an off season of feeling really good about himself, and then kind of as things started to go wrong, as you said, he has not been able to make that counterpunch. He himself has not been able to make the next adjustment that he has to do in his career to combat what the rest of the league is doing against him.
Right. You know what? And we've seen him. If we just want to live with talking about Dak here for a little bit, we've seen him continue to make plays with his legs running. And I love the fact that they call, you know, a lot of quarterback draws for him. The fact that they will let him run. I like that he can scramble out of trouble. What I haven't seen too terribly much, and I don't take it as I haven't seen it at all because we have, but it seemed like it happened more last year, was throwing on the run and being accurate.
Right.
Which was really kind of the impressive thing last year, where he would get flush out of pocket, run, you know, he's running left or right, and makes an accurate throw downfield for a big completion. Now, some of those this year seem like shorter routes. There's not a whole lot, and Rodney, you've been calling for it since the beginning of the season. There's not a whole lot stretching that ball down the field.
Right.
And who is that guy? Is that a Terrence Williams? We know it's not Dez. I mean, Dez can get downfield, but that's not
it's
his
not really his game.
His
right
game,
now, yeah.
We know any it's longer. Not Witten. Beasley's not that guy. So Bryce Butler,
I think he's probably at the top of that list as a deep threat.
Yeah,
with
Terrence
his size
Williams,
and speed.
We haven't seen Switzer in there on the offense at all,
right,
which is alarming. Because remember when we got drafted, we started thinking about the Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman type system.
Right.
The, you know, Chris Hogan, Julian Edelman, you know, I mean, at one point they got three guys up there that all basically look like those slot type receivers, you know, Wes Welker-ish. And I get it. It sounds racist, I guess, because we're naming all small 5'10" white guys but Switzer was the guy that had plus speed, moves in the open field. That was probably you were looking to put him on the field with those other weapons and get the ball downfield. And we just haven't seen him on the field at all.
No, we haven't. And I wonder, too, if some of that is that and we talked about it in the offseason. Oh, my gosh, we have so many weapons. We're going to have so many things that we can do, and we can dink and we can dunk. We can throw the ball downfield. You know what I mean? Like, we just had so many weapons. But then as we kind of struggled a little bit early on in the season, immediately against Denver then in the second week of the season, we just have never quite hit our stride. So why is that? Well, can you say that you have too many weapons? Can you say, you know what I mean, like where you can't find a flow because you're always trying to overthink and do a little bit too much and get just a little bit too fancy? I don't know. I don't really subscribe to that, but maybe there's a little bit there on that. But, yeah, I have been curious all year as to why Switzer hasn't been in the lineup a little bit more, an extra end around or just something to get the ball in his hands. When we just saw, he finally had his big explosive play that we've been calling for all year. And ran that pump back, and it was beautiful. And that, and really, I guess in this win with the Redskins, there's a big Band-Aid that was put on this game that makes us look a little bit better than maybe we were. Washington gave us the ball four times, four turnovers, and we returned a punt for a touchdown.
Yeah, it's, your defense special teams right there.
Two of Dak's 11 completions, were for touchdowns, but they were on short fields too.
Right.
So, it's not like he was throwing the ball over the field and doing this, that, and the other. So, I'm with you on that. It is a little curious as to why Switzer maybe hasn't been more involved, but I would still like to see a bigger threat downfield in the form of Bryce Butler or Terrence Wentz, somebody. And part of that, though, is because – and to go all the way back to what you started with, saying how you like to see Dak throw on the run, and he's done less of that this year, but his footwork this year has been bad, and it's been consistently bad. So when his footwork's not good in the pocket, what makes us think that he might actually have good footwork getting out of the pocket and throwing on the run? But maybe that's where he's more comfortable. I don't know, but you're right. He's done less of that this year, and I, for whatever reason, that's why I've been calling for the deep ball. Like, why not just, a 3-5-step drop where he doesn't have to necessarily worry about too much footwork, where when he hits his back foot on whatever drop it is, it's 3 or 5, like, he's throwing the ball downfield. He's heaving it downfield to see what happens.
Right. They call Dez one of the best high point pass catchers in the league. I mean, the guy's big. He's physical. He's that breed of receiver that is prototypical today, where it's a lot of what we, would term basketball plays, where boxing out, getting up, hand fighting, getting positioning, and going up and getting that ball, whether it's a rebound or whatever, however you want to phrase it there. So, I'm with you, Rodney. I'd like to see, Dak get back, 5-step drop, chuck it up, towards the sidelines and see if Dez can't get up and make a play, get the pass interference, which we had, at least one of those benefits there. But let's move on to, let's talk a little bit about the running game. We'll stick on the offensive side. And obviously, Alfred Morris, everything you could possibly want in the back, as relieving Zeke for not being there. Didn't see a whole lot of Rod Smith's success, right?
Right. He was not really, no, he was 10 for 27.
So, not a ton of success there, but Alfred Morris got it going. I know when we sat here watching it live, we kept saying, run the ball again.
Yep.
Run it again. I mean, he's getting 8 yards.
Yeah.
And those holes were starting to get bigger. I like when they get up tempo like that a little bit and just keep pounding the ball.
Yeah.
Our conditioning's better than your conditioning. Let's get it going.
Yeah.
So
and using their pretty athletic offensive line, get them out on, pull the guards or the center. You know what I mean? Like, get out there and get in and try to create a little space that way. And no, that was really effective whenever they did that, especially once they got the Redskins defense back on their heels a little bit.
Right. So getting on with the rest of what we're concerned about with running, this obviously would have been the week that Ezekiel, had a chance to come back. If he would have gone through the trial, decided not to do that, to prolong that, let's just go ahead and take our 6 games and be done with it. So we have – he's down – done with 4.
Yep.
We got 2 left. I guess I'm fairly confident looking at what Alfred Morris is doing that, the Giant game that's coming up on Sunday should be, another opportunity for him to shine. But then you go into the Raiders – which is one of those teams that's, Jekyll and Hyde. before Zeke comes back for the Christmas Eve game against Seattle.
Yep.
So, 2 big games there at the end of the season with Zeke back. One's going to be, I think, a foregone conclusion with Philly. I would hope that they would have home field wrapped up, but they shit the bed this past week in losing to – who did they lose to again? Was it the
– who did Philly lose
Philly.
To? Now you put me on the spot.
I know. Whatever. I watched the game and
– was it Seattle?
No.
No. Okay. I'll look it
up. Good story. Look that up on the computer box. I'll keep talking.
Just so, keep rambling on, and I'll
Two more games before you get Zeke back. We'll see what if Alford could keep it going against the Giants. And then we got, obviously, the Raider game that we're going to have to handle our business.
It was the Seattle Seahawks 24-10. Thank you. Thank you very
much. Who'd you say it was, Seattle?
Yes, I did. Let's roll the tape back.
You want me to play it back? Do I need to play it back for you? I'll have her
get her
repeat it back.
In here. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No.
But
no,
when I'm right, I'm right. And I want to make sure I tell you.
You are right. So, no, fairly happy that way. Offensive line, like I said, once they got going, they got going.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whole lot to say about the receivers because Witten had one catch.
We only had 11.
We only had 11. So yeah. It wasn't like the ball was being chucked all over the Chiefs.
Five of them, so.
Right.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, you know, I got to think that we got to get that passing game going. Now, hey, if we don't have it this next week and we win, I guess it's all about the wins. I know you guys are out there saying, oh, but it's a win, Steve-O. It's a win. You're right. I want the win. But I'm also looking at how do you build.
Big picture.
Yeah, exactly. Big picture. When you face a team like Washington and then when you face a team like New York Giants, you gotta showcase some of your tools, okay? Got to do it.
Yep. Well, and we're because eventually, whether it's the Giants this week, the Raiders, Seattle, Philly, whoever, eventually, if we continue to run the ball effectively, but the other team knows we have absolutely no chance of throwing the ball on them, they're going to take that away from us.
Right.
Even with Zeke in the lineup. Now, can he be a little bit more effective than Alfred? Probably against an 8-man front, but Zeke's only one guy, and if they can still stack 8 or 9 in the box, and eventually somebody's going to be on block. He can't continually run over everybody or juke everybody, you know. Like he can do that, and he's more than capable of doing that, and will do it better than most running backs. But ultimately, they can still shut that down. So what? How do you combat that?
Right.
You've got to prove that we can actually throw the ball.
And that's the thing. Maybe you know, and I without going back and being Mortensen or Jaworski or some of these guys and breaking down film. I can't recall how many they had in the box. I'm sure it was a typical 7 to 8. But I know Zeke gets a lot of 8 to 9. Mm. You know, Zeke is keyed on the run, and I think that the fear of him breaking something big carries more weight than an Alfred Morris. I think they believe Alfred Morris gets to the second level that they can still stop him. You know, I know he had that big 76-yard run earlier in the year, but at the end of the day, most of the time it's going to be, 8 or 9 if he has a big run, where Zeke can really rip off 20 to 30 if he gets past that second level fairly easy. So the running game, good. Not much to say about the receivers. Let's move over to let's do this. Let's go to the special teams. Okay. We had Dan Bailey back,
great.
Which – I still had Ted Nugent on a fantasy football lineup pick for one of my.
Should have probably dropped him.
Yeah, should have probably dropped him. I'll have to do that tonight before lineup set. But Bailey's back, and he looked good. Looks like he's back being healthy. As long as he doesn't pull a Martin Gramatica or something like that, I would anticipate we have him through the rest of the season.
Yep.
Mr. Automatic, if you will, right?
Yeah, well, and that's huge for us because you're right. He is and has been Mr. Automatic, and to have him healthy, ready to go. We assume he's 100%. That's all reports and indications are that he's 100%, so we'll take it for what that's worth. But, you know, especially with the way our offense is kind of sputtered from time to time, you know, it's very important to pick up 3 points in certain situations when the other team gives you that opportunity. Of course, you want to score 7, but, you know, just any – all he's one of our stars. You never usually don't refer to your kicker as a star, but he has been a star for this team for so long because he does his job better than anyone else.
Well, let me ask you this, and that's an interesting point. If you get Dan Bailey – continues to go through his career and has a fine career, kicks into his late 30s, retires as the all-time most accurate kicker, right? Which I believe he is at this point through whatever part of his career, right?
Yeah.
Is he a Hall of Fame guy?
I would say so. I think so, personally.
But I would say not.
No? Just because he's a kicker?
Just because he's a kicker. And you don't think
like
of...
Super Bowl winning field goal?
You don't think of him in the same... In the same breath as an Adam Vinatieri, right?
Well, then do you say since Dan Marino didn't win a Super Bowl or have a big Super Bowl moment?
Nothing to say about Super Bowls. I'm just talking about it's like, and we're going to come up with that debate with Tony Romo. Right. Statistically, one of the best quarterbacks in Dallas Cowboy history. Cowboys got their fair share of quarterbacks in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Sure.
Is Tony Romo going to join them? Lot of wins.
It's tough.
Lot of stats.
I want to see him there, of course.
Okay, but
what does the rest of the general public think?
But is he that guy that you say, boy, he was a generational type quarterback, or because of where we are in the passing league that we're in, that you know what, he had to go up against the likes of Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre. Drew Brees, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
And on
you
know,
Philip,
yeah,
Phil Rivers. Yeah. So is he a Hall of Famer? I don't know if he's a top – I won't say 10 because I think he'd had to be in the top 10, but I don't think he's a top 5 quarterback in his era. And all those 5 quarterbacks are going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So that's where, you know, you get into the Dan Bailey discussion, accurate – but is he the guy that comes to the top of mind when you go, hey, I got a game-winning field goal I need to kick? Who are you putting back there out of all time? Dan Bailey's not the guy you're probably putting back in there, even though it should be statistically.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're going with this, and I don't know.
I'm just trying to draw time out here, babe.
I know. I try to avoid getting into those discussion, not debates, I guess is a better word. But no, your points are all valid, and I think you've got a good argument there. But I don't know. I mean, it's tough whenever you're trying to debate generations or eras in the league. But no, I mean, I don't know. I don't even want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Is that the best answer you've ever heard on this podcast whenever one of the hosts says, I just don't even want to talk about it?
Yeah, probably.
I'm sorry, but I don't. My point is, I guess I really don't have an answer because I said, yes, I would, and then you made a pretty good argument against it, and I see your point. But, you know, I don't know. How do you ultimately judge that? How would you make that final decision?
Well, I would have to look up on the computer box how many kickers are in the Hall of Fame. But I can tell you this much. We know Adam Vinatieri's going in. Adam Vinatieri is 63 or 64 years old this year. And Dan Bailey's
quite that old, but he's old.
Bailey's only 29. Yeah. So if he's going to get there, he's going to have to put in another 10-plus years of kicking at this level. If he can do that, God bless him and put him in the Hall of Fame, right? If he puts in 15, 18 years kicking the ball, 20 years,
right,
and
well,
he's the most accurate at that point.
I think really all it would take for me then is for him just to have that just one big or two big playoff / Super Bowl moments where he has a couple Adam Vinatieri moments. Wouldn't that essentially put him into the Hall of Fame then?
I mean, if his longevity sticks there.
But then like, to my earlier point of like, you know, do you hold that against one particular position or player that the overall team didn't get to some of those moments to even allow him to participate or to create or to win in some of those games at those times?
I can't even recall a game-winning field goal. I mean, I know he's had them.
Sure.
But
nothing big in the playoffs.
Right. Well, that's obvious. But as everybody's tuning off the podcast because we're talking about kickers and Hall of Fame.
Let's just get off the kickers.
Let's move to the other side of special teams. Switzer finally had the opportunity to run a ball back, a little bit of open field, converted a touchdown. No block in the back, no hold on it. But what's surprising to me is the very next punt that the Redskins have to pin us back against our goal line, We have Beasley back there to field it. You think that's just because they're more comfortable with him not making a goofy mistake around the goal line?
I guess. I mean, that's what they've been doing, so I think logic would tell us that's exactly it. In those situations where it's going to be nothing but a fair catch or a ball going over their head, then Beasley's our guy.
Okay.
When we have the chance for a return, then we have Switzer. And I guess that's just because, you know, Beasley's the more veteran guy. He will make the – I don't want to say smarter because I'm not trying to say Switzer's dumb. I don't know how do you describe that. But he will make the veteran play. He will take the fair catch. He will let the ball go over his head. He'll do whatever. But Switzer is more of the risk taker. But that's also what makes him, you know, dangerous. You have to be somewhat crazy and a risk taker to be a punt returner in the NFL. Especially to return one, I guess I should say. Not so much to just necessarily catch it, but to actually catch it and start running as fast as you can in the direction of another 11 guys who are trying to chop your head off coming at you full speed, you know, and that's what makes that kind of play so exciting. So ultimately, that's why I think they do it that way.
Well, he did get the touchdown. Huge touchdown. Got the monkey off his back, which was great to see. I look for him to continue to build onto that and for that to turn out to be a great draft pick for the Dallas Cowboys. Another weapon back there, which is really – and it doesn't have to necessarily result in touchdowns. Sometimes it just needs to result in, you know, that 15, 18, 20-yard return.
Yeah.
Get to the second level, make a guy miss or two. Don't get that foolish penalty, the holding, the block in the back – and turn that field position around. Because you remember, you field the ball on, you know, your 15-yard line, and you get dropped right there. It still takes a couple of first downs to move it. You field it on the 15 and get it out to the 35 and get one first down. Now you can pin them back on their goal line. And a lot of it, with the way we're structured to play, is field position.
Without a doubt, that's our identity. Yes, is running the ball, controlling the ball, and then on those drives where the play breaks down a little bit for us, then have the ability to try to pin them deep and be. Well, and then you know, why do we want to obviously pin them deep? I mean, the obvious answer is we'll make the other team go, you know, the length of the field. But our defense, especially, has to be put in a position to make the other team do that because we are the bend but don't break style defense. So if we're giving teams short fields, our defense is going to struggle. And if we make the other team go the length of the field, you know, we're not necessarily going to turn the ball over, you know, or have our defense turn the ball over a lot, this week being the exception. But our defense is just not the style as it sits currently to be the big playmaking defense. It's to just contain. So, you know, what better way to contain than – to have the other team have to go to the length of the field.
Yeah, you know, that's where, you know, we go back to that Washington game, and it was early in the first, you know, sometime in the first quarter. Washington had the ball, I think it was like 4th and 3 or something from the Cowboys 43. It was crazy. It wasn't that far away, and I just felt like at that point, if I was Washington, I would have tried, what do they got to lose? They're mired in a 500 season at best. They got alligators chomping at their ankles all day long from the standpoint they don't have Cousins under contract. You know, they're going to have to deal with that. It's not like they're going anywhere. They're not a, hey, get me into the dance.
Yeah.
Let's see what I can do. They don't have a prayer. Okay? The Cowboys at least would have an outside shot of doing something if you got them into the playoffs. Okay, just give me an opportunity. Go to the dance,
yeah,
and let's see what I can do.
We have weapons. We'll take our best shot.
But yeah. Washington's a nothing. I get it. They have injuries, but it was 4th and 3 from their 43, and
yeah, that
there was
curious,
and it was a punt.
Mm-hmm.
And I pushed the button there. I pushed the envelope. Try to go for it on 4th. But that leads us into the whole thing with our defense. Man, our defense came to play. And I know that we had that jackwagon Corey in here, but he talked about it quite a bit, you know, during the live Facebook Live session we went through about how the defensive backs for the Cowboys are young and they will continue to improve sideline to sideline. Our linebackers got in on plays. Okay, once again, no Sean Lee back there. Our defensive line just looked formidable, if I can use a big word that has over two syllables. Can you count those?
That's four.
Okay.
Okay, got it. So what, next question.
So they got after it, got pressure on Cousins, and really took it to them. The only breakdown we had was when we got him scrambling out of a pocket, and he did what looked like something Tony Romo would do. He reminds me a lot of Romo, by the way, and we talked about that.
Yeah.
That he just kind of threw one up and let Crowder come and get it, and they made a couple of guys miss and got in the open field, and next thing you know, it's they're only down by 10 at halftime, which it should have been. This game was a blowout, but it could have been a lot worse for Washington.
Sure. Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, and just I wanted to throw a couple of things out there about individuals on the defense, but Anthony Hitchens had a monster game, 15 total tackles, 12 solo. Two tackles for loss. So he stepped up and did a Sean Lee type effort against the Redskins. And then to talk about our secondary, we had several more pass deflect. That was the encouraging thing for me, is that our safeties and all of our DBs were in the mix on pass plays. They were close. They were getting their hands in there. Jeff Heath had a pass deflection, and I'm going to screw his name up again. I always do, but Chidobe Awuzie had three.
Awuzie.
He had a big game. Now, you know, stat line, he had three tackles, blah, 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 but he had three pass deflections, and I just felt like as we watched that game, he was in the mix on every opportunity that came his way. And that's important. That's huge for our defense. And we've been talking about how this was going to be a young secondary, and we had our fingers and our toes crossed all year that they were going to get better as the season went on. And I think by and large they have. Let's not pretend like this is the Ravens defense of whenever that was, 2000, yeah. 99, 2000, whatever.
2000,
yeah. So, you know, but we've seen some positive things come from those young rookies that we have back there.
Do we usually go back to the Bears of 85, or are we going to go with the Ravens of 2000? I mean, what's the going consensus now?
Depends on how old
team.
You are, probably.
Okay.
You're old enough that you'd probably go Bears.
Bears.
I'm young, so I remember the Ravens.
Okay.
Because I was three in 85, so I don't actually remember it. I've learned about it in history. And, you
they
know,
teach that in high school?
They do. Actually, we did have a class like that, yeah.
There in Clinton County?
Yeah. So, the Ravens are the team of my generation that I actually was able to physically watch and understand the game by then. You know what I mean? So, but anyway, to get off topic yet again.
All right, well, back to the finish up on the Redskins game. I mean, we didn't get too many silly penalties. We had a couple.
By and large, we did a really good job there, yeah.
Yeah, the time of possession in our favor by a couple of minutes there. Huge. Stat line, when you look at it, it looks like a much closer game stats-wise, except for the most glaring one, the four turnovers, yeah. And then the score, yeah. Obviously. So, all in all, you got to beat the teams that you should beat. You got to steal a couple of games in there. And as of right now, I'm not sure we've stolen enough games to get us into the playoffs.
Have we stole any? Really? When you look at it?
No.
At first, we kind of felt like the Chiefs maybe, but we've seen that spiral continuing and getting worse.
Here's what I would say. You know, if you get a second win against the Giants, I think looking at it from a preseason standpoint, that you stole one of them somewhere. Okay, you get that second win.
Right.
The Cardinals, you know, not much of, you know, nothing to really kind of brag about there. But the Packers at home still hurts.
Yeah, that was one that let get away.
That's
and the Rams,
that
for that
hurts.
Matter. Those are two – I mean, those two close ball games that we let get away in the fourth quarter.
Right. And then just the Falcons catching fire when they did.
Yeah.
you know, not too much on the Philly game. Expected the Charger game to be more competitive than that. Yeah. But once again, I think when you look at the Falcons and the Chargers played one of their better games for each team during the Cowboys,
yeah.
And then the Packers had probably their only bright moment of the year. The Aaron Rodgers doing what Aaron Rodgers does, which, I mean, we can go back to that. I mean, I think when you – even if you're not a Bulls fan, I think if you go watch the old basketball Chicago Bulls, that you would love to see Michael Jordan take a last-second shot and make
sure.
it.
Sure. I did as a kid, yeah. Of course.
Even if you're not –
right.
Even if you're a a Pacers fan, you got to appreciate a guy that's at the top of his craft.
Yep.
That does what he's supposed to do. I know Jono hates when we kind of go off on that, but it was.
Jono's not here today.
Yeah, Jono's not here. Hashtag no Jono, right?
We can appreciate greatness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's move. Let's turn the page.
All right.
Washington.
Moving off of Washington.
Washington is in the books. Let's go back and let's look at some of the stats from the earlier Giants game because we have them. It's a Sunday noon game. I would imagine that the only place you're seeing this is if you're in Dallas, you got it. If you're anywhere else, this is not going to be
probably not
your NFL game of the week. You're not getting the A-club here. So get your DirecTV out. Your Red Zone's going to carry the Red Zone.
I'm probably going to illegally download it from the internet and watch it on a tablet. Yeah.
You're going to have to tell me how to do that.
I'll show you.
You'll show me that?
Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate it.
It's going to cost you a few dollars. You got to grease a couple. Not my palm. I'm taking the money, and I have to give it to someone else.
Really?
Yeah. They don't like to be introduced, so I have to be the intermediary.
I did pay a little bit extra at lunch today. And I brought in the coupon.
You did bring a coupon, but I don't think you paid extra. I'll see what I can do. I'll show you.
All right. I appreciate that. So if we can, let's see if we can't pull up the stats from the earlier.
Yeah, I have a few here. You know, Dak had now we only scored 19 points, but when you look at the stat line, you see Dak threw the ball. He was 24 of 39 for 268. When's the last time we saw that? It feels like it's been a while for at least that many yards. And then Zeke ran the ball 24 for 104. I mean, you know, just pulling this game from memory is, remember how like we just dominated the first half, but we were up 16-0 or 16-3. We were up 16-0 at the half. Yeah, it was 16-0. But like we just absolutely dominated the first half, but it felt as though we only had 16 points and like, you know, like we allowed New York to stay in that game. Now they never got back into it, obviously. But ultimately, when we moved the ball up and down the field, and we only scored 19 points, I do remember that. But yeah, and you look at the stat lines for the receivers. The ball was distributed around pretty well. Nadez only had two, but Terrence had six catches. Witten had seven. Zeke caught five out of the backfield. Beasley had his three. You know, so it was pretty well distributed. We just didn't put a lot of points up on the board. This week will be interesting to see because I feel the way our offense has been trending lately. We haven't been spreading the ball around real well. Dak has been struggling. Running game, I guess, fairly comparable. Obviously, minus Zeke, but I don't know. We'll see how this is going. It's a weird week though because we're coming off a win, but the Giants have a lot of shit going on.
They got a complete shit show going up there.
Total
in New York
shit show going on right now. So who knows what kind of team's going to show up? You know, like will the team finally feel the monkeys off their back and play free and easy, or are they going to still be feeling the distractions? And it sounds from what the players are saying, there's no love lost in that locker room for McAdoo not being there this week. It doesn't sound like it. Nothing's positive has been coming out from that.
Who is taking over the reins on that?
Steve Spagnuolo.
Spag's got it.
He has the worst record of any head coach thanks to his tenure with the St. Louis Rams.
So interesting enough.
I don't know. I made most of that up. But I feel like he's got to be up there with one of the worst of all time.
He is.
Wins and loss wise.
He is. And I think he had a brief stint in New Orleans. Was that right? Where he took over interim?
He might have had an interim deal there with Hazlitt maybe or something like that.
No, Hazlitt did the interim here.
No, I think he went to go coach the defense in New Orleans after he got shipped out of town.
But it was the whole like what they call that? What gate when they were trying to kill the guys?
Well, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, when the cameras were in the room and they were making Greg Williams.
Yeah, Greg Williams. We want to kill this guy or whatever.
Hurt the head. They were trying to hurt Frank Gore, if I remember correctly.
So I thought he had an interim there. Interesting story about him when he coached here with the Rams is one of his best friends. Of all
we're
time.
Not allowed to talk about. Oh, wait, I know. No, yeah, I know. Jono's not.
Jono's hashtag no Jono. One of his best friends was a guy I actually ended up meeting through youth baseball.
Okay.
His son played youth baseball, on a team that my good friend coached and my son played against and everything like that. So I ended up meeting him and his wife, great people. But they got out of football when Spags got shit canned. And went down to New Orleans because obviously he didn't have a coaching, he wasn't making coaching decisions
right
that way. It'd be interesting to see if he brings his buddy back in the mix, if he does good up there in New York. And that's the thing with NFL, that what separates probably 95% of fans and like the guys like Jono is, you know what? I like Steve Spagnuolo. He was a good dude.
Yeah.
He was terrible.
He just wasn't
as a head coach.
That was a little bit above his pay grade.
Yep, a little bit above his pay grade. But liked him. I liked what he did from a personal standpoint here in St.
Sure.
Louis. But I wouldn't mind him having success, just not this week.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'd like a close game. Maybe I'd like a 35-31 game. Something happens, they score late, but they can't get the onside kick, and it shows well for him, because I'd like to see him as a head coach again, just because I like the guy.
I don't think that's going to happen. I appreciate your love for Steve Spagnuolo, but I don't have that. You were more close to the situation, obviously.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
It's just personal preference.
Yeah, you know what? And I've never coached a game in the NFL either, so I couldn't do shit for, either. So he's obviously been in this game a long time, has a lot of respect, has had success in New York. Was Jerry Reese the GM in 2006 when they won the Super Bowl? I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. I don't know. The reason why I asked, though, is what's the relationship? Does he still have an in within the organization? Was his relationship owner-based or was it GM-based? Because if it was GM-based, chances are he's not going to be there now either.
Right.
And then obviously if he's not going to be at the top of that coaching search, whoever they select, do they still want him to be the D coordinator? There's a lot of stuff that can go on there. So
yeah, that's funny. We had, during my Cardinals podcast, we talked about early on a kid that I grew up with, a buddy of mine I grew up with, played high school ball with, same age, graduated with, ended up moving on to play Major League Baseball, became friends with a guy by the name of David Bell, and always talked about if David ever got to a big league position where he was a manager that he would call Mark and have a, some sort of position bench coach or something with him. Obviously, I don't think David's made it quite through the ranks as quickly. Mark's moved on with his career outside of baseball. But those guys are like that. They bring people on, which is, once again, I believe Spags and his buddy that I know were old college teammates and, best friends in each other's weddings type thing. So that's an interesting fraternity like that, where they kind of stick together with their own.
It's good and bad. I mean, you can see the obvious good side of that is that they have some continuity with each other. They play together. They know each other's strengths and weaknesses as a player, and then obviously now as a coach. And then the bad side, this isn't necessarily bad, but the perception of the nepotism kind of involved in it. Like you're not necessarily making the best choice, in the coach that you hire to your staff, but since he's your buddy, you bring him along. I don't know. That's a gray area. And obviously you have to be much closer to the situation to know all the ins and outs of it. It makes sense to me. If I was in coaching today, I know that, the handful of guys that I grew up with or played through, played with, some of my, friends that have gone to the major leagues and done big things and coaching and as a player and all this. And the obvious choice would be them, wouldn't it? I mean, of course, they're good at what they do. So they're probably going to be good at doing this. So
absolutely. So getting on with that, obviously they got a shit show going up there in New York. What do you expect out of this game?
Well, this feels as that's what you know because they have so much going on. If this was last week, then I think it's different. But now, I just from the vibe that's coming out of the Giants locker room right now, it sure sounds like most of those people in there are happy that McAdoo is no longer there. Like, he was not well respected within the room. Fair or unfair, I don't know. But that's just kind of what's being reported and kind of the leaks that are kind of coming out and this, that, and the other. And now the GM is gone, obviously, as well. So, you know, these players, there's still a decent amount of talent in the room. You know, they don't have much of a receiving core, obviously. You know, some of the weapons are a little bit limited, but I don't know. It feels like, I don't want to say it's a trap game, but in a way it kind of has that feeling to it because you don't know. It's hard to handicap what the Giants are doing this week. You know, are they still the team that's just completely spiraling, or are they finally going to have a week where they all feel pretty good about each other despite the lost season, but now they're all working for their jobs for next year, whether it's with the Giants or another team. So there's still individuals on that team that have a lot to prove. Eli has a lot to prove too. He just had to sit down. Like, he was told to go sit down.
Right.
You know, a two-time Super Bowl winner, a Manning legacy, family legacy.
210 straight starts.
Yeah. You know, like, he's going to have a big chip on his shoulder, and he's playing against his rival, the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to want to stick it to him. He's going to want to stick it to the Cowboys. He's going to want to stick it to McAdoo. He's going to want to stick it to the organization. All those people that just put him on notice last week, he's going to want to prove them wrong this week. So that's a dangerous combination,
it's
in my opinion.
It's very dangerous. You got a snake backed into the corner.
Yep.
And he's shown that he can bite when he's backed into a corner, right?
Without a doubt.
I mean, you see it, whether it's the bubble gum sticking to the helmet or whatever the other thing he did to win a couple of Super Bowls. But let me ask you this. Let's do conspiracy theory. I know we're in here in a room that we do podcasts, and they got the Clinton body count conspiracy board up in here with all the deaths surrounded by the political family of the Clintons. But, yeah, exactly. Anyway, they're sitting there at 2-9, right? Am I right? They're 2-10?
2-10.
And you got 0-12 Browns and another 2-10 team in the 49ers. 49ers just traded for Garoppolo, right?
Yep.
You have the Browns at 0-12. They just drafted DeShone Kizer last year. How much do they believe in him? Do you think that the Giants are sitting there, maybe they brought in Spags, saying, Spags, let's keep your
this
shitty
thing fall apart.
Yeah, let your shitty record continue, and let's lose a couple of games, and get us that number one pick. Is that a Baker Mayfield? Who is that going to be?
If we're going to talk conspiracy theory, that would never be let out publicly. Could they? You're going to have to keep something like that very close to the vest. So before you hire Spags, you're literally going to have to be in a room with him and maybe one other person to say, hey, we want this thing to go badly.
And
you're
going
to have to eat it, but we'll take care of you.
Right. Eli crawfishes you.
Yeah.
Eli's the one that you're trying to – what is he? He's the cleaner, right?
He's the cleaner.
He's the one – I'm trying to relate it to the movie.
With George Clooney?
Yeah. He's something in there that's really going to keep you from –
He's the janitor.
He's going to keep you from accomplishing what you want because he has his whole reputation riding on it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I think obviously if I am the owner of the Giants right now, I'm looking for a head coach and a GM and a lot of answers as to why this season was just absolutely terrible. But at the same time, I'm looking and saying, you know, how am I going to be better for 2018? Well, that's for my team to suck the rest of the way, and I get a top five draft pick, top three or four, whatever, you know, kind of in that top five realm, because I need X. you know, whatever that is, a running back, wide receiver, got to draft, you know, the next quarterback to take over for Eli Manning, whatever that is. But, the better chances you have, then, you know, the higher draft picks you want to have. So, of course, you want the season to continue to tank, probably.
Yeah, Geno Smith was not the answer up there.
No, he was not. What was even stranger was he's already had his chance. He's kind of been around. I don't know anything about, is it David Webb? You know, like the
Spud Webb?
No, so that's NBA. I think he played for the Kings and maybe the Hawks.
Hawks, for sure.
Apparently his name is Davis Webb. Okay, Davis Webb. But he's the rookie. He's the guy they drafted. So anyway, it doesn't matter who it is. Geno Smith has already been a quarterback. He was not very good. So you bench your more than likely Hall of Fame quarterback for Geno Smith. Why not the rookie that you – I feel like you could have justified it
– moving on to the rookie.
A little bit better.
Right.
It wouldn't have been a clean break that they would have hoped
for. I don't think McAdoo loses his job after a loss if he moves to the rookie to say, hey, we got to see what we have.
Right.
Opposed to Geno Smith saying, we got to see what we have in him.
So when it comes to conspiracy theories, that's where it gets interesting, because McAdoo and Jerry Reese were both fired. Whose call was that ultimately? Who fell on the sword for that decision? Immediately after it happened, it was McAdoo. But then Reese got fired along with him. So was it the owner asking those two guys to do that so that he could then therefore fire them for the public perception? You know what I mean? Like, that's more of the conspiracy theory that I go behind, that the meta game that goes on in the front office with that stuff.
Nah.
Or was it just McAdoo? That's the decision he made because he's the coach, and then I guess he ran it by Reese. Reese okayed it, and then eventually the owner was like, no, both of you are gone. That was
Make
a terrible
no mistake
decision.
About it. These guys are hired to get fired.
Sure.
Well, okay?
Yeah, that's the,
If you're going to get fired, you're going to get fired doing it your way.
Yeah.
You know, and if you think that Geno Smith gives you a better opportunity, I don't know how. I'm not there at practice. There's nothing in Geno Smith's past NFL experience that tells me that he was going to turn a 2-9 team around.
No.
But from that aspect, boy, Eli Manning was pretty shitty this year.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, don't get me wrong. And really, Eli's never been someone that I've turned to for big fantasy numbers, turned to for, you know, having these big outrageous offensive days. But what I would turn to Eli Manning for is he's a gamer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, he has some absolute clunkers throughout his career. Bad games, bad seasons, this, that, and the other. But I just – it's hard to bet against him, though.
It is for sure hard to bet against him. So, hey, couple things. I know we're kind of pushing some time limit here.
Did we already burn through our time?
We don't even have – nobody's even taking care of us. They just left us in here.
We could just keep going. Let's do a marathon, 24 hours.
I don't even know if this thing's being recorded.
Probably not.
It may or
may
not.
John probably told him just let him go in there. You know, do your normal thing and then just cut the mic off right before you leave. They'll have no idea.
Exactly. So here's the deal. You got Thursday night. I'm going to do something a little bit different that Jono never wants to do. You got Thursday night football game to get tonight. You got New Orleans and Atlanta. Both teams above us. New Orleans 9-3, well above us. Probably going to have a hard time catching them if they fall into a wild card position. But, Rodney, I'm assuming we need them to beat Atlanta tonight, because Atlanta, we need them to go from 7-5 to 7-6, right?
Yes. I think at this point we want New Orleans to go ahead and run away with that division and then have Atlanta completely falter down the stretch, so much so that they end up 8-8 or 9-7, and somehow we sneak up there at 10-6.
Yeah, we need
– because we've lost the head-to-head with them, so we can't be tied with them.
Right, so – boy, it's going to be tough.
It is. It's tough. We've got a real long shot, but we still got a chance.
Would you say 9%?
I don't. It was something awfully small, much smaller than I had realized until I looked it up. But we don't control our own destiny. Obviously, we have to win every game from here on out, but it doesn't. Even if we do go 10-6, we still have a really shitty opportunity to get in the playoffs.
Right.
It can still happen, though. Strike lightning in a bottle. Chip in a chair. Keep pushing forward.
All right.
How many more cliches can I say?
I don't know. So the next game of no consequence, San Fran and Houston, who gives a crap? Chicago and Cincy, no, who cares?
Next.
Indy and Buffalo, nothing. Dallas and New York, obviously we need the Cowboys to win. So here's the interesting one. You got Detroit and Tampa Bay. Detroit sitting at 6-6. Tampa Bay is at 4-8. Pretty much they're out of it, okay? But I think you need Tampa to win here. You need Detroit to fall to 6-7.
Yeah, you need them to come back to the pack too,
right,
all the way back. And, oh, yeah, and keep going, yeah, past us, yeah.
So absolutely. Here's the hard one. Green Bay and Cleveland. Cleveland's 0-2 or 0-12,
yeah,
and Green Bay sitting at 6-6 and hold that over you.
Right.
You know?
You've got to ask for the Cleveland Browns to win their game for this year.
Yeah, they have to win there. Oakland and KC, who cares? Minnesota, Carolina. I think you would want Minnesota to win here. Minnesota's 10-2. We can't catch them.
Right.
I mean, I guess we could, but who cares? Somebody's got to win that division in North, so let's just give it to Minnesota.
Let
them run away with it. But Carolina's sitting at 8-4.
Yeah.
So we could possibly catch them. So we need Minnesota to win.
Right. And since we don't play them, what's the next what's the other head like tiebreaker?
Best-looking cheerleaders.
Well, then we got that.
We got that. Jets and Denver. Are you shitting me? Denver's only got 3 wins.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How do I keep missing this?
And they whooped us, too.
They whooped us, and they got some offensive weapons, and they got 3 wins? Jesus Christ. That's brutal.
Yeah.
Washington, 5-7, and the Chargers. Realistically, Washington's still in it. Would love to see them just lose another one.
Right.
Get them out of there.
Put them out all together.
Put them out of their misery.
Yeah.
Tennessee and Arizona. Another one I think that you need to have Arizona lose. I mean, you don't have to have it, but it would be nice for them to lose and be
sure.
done with that.
Yep.
Philly, 10-2. Rams, 9-3. I think it has no consequence.
No, I don't either. Neither one of
the
them.
The only
We've
thing we
lost
can hope
head to head to L.A. So
only thing we can hope for
matter.
Is maybe injuries.
Yeah, that could I get. I don't like to.
Did I say
Rangers.
That? Did I just say
I just
that out loud?
I agreed with you without even thinking about it, and then
right.
I immediately regretted it.
Okay.
It was my Catholic guilt.
Seattle and Jacksonville. Seattle, 8-4. Jacksonville, 8-4.
I'm going to go ahead and root for the Jags.
You got to root for the Jags, right?
This is an opportunity where there's a lot of NFC playing AFC this week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be huge if we can have the AFC dominate some of these teams this week and help keep, you know, help improve those percentages that we, what little percentage we do have of getting into the playoffs.
And then the last one, or no, not the last one, I think. Maybe not.
That should be just about everyone that's ahead of us.
Baltimore, Pittsburgh,
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah,
New
nothing
England and Miami, nothing.
Yeah.
A lot of fantasy football playoffs starting this week and a lot next week. Ours starts this week, so a little nervous.
Are you going to make it? You seemed a little troubled at lunch, as though maybe you were having some really tough roster decisions that you were going to have to make. You're going to have a tough conversation with one of your star players.
So here's the deal. I had a bad week last week. I scored the most points, got the most category wins. I'm literally kicking ass this year. But I've had a couple of bad wins, and I've had a couple of – well, let's just say bad wins, where I didn't come out and play. Now, it doesn't quite bother me, but I didn't really try to bench my players, but Brady was off a little bit, and I didn't play a couple of running backs I could have.
Right.
So, a little nervous. I'm a 13-point dog.
I'm sorry, you guys have lines in it?
Yeah.
So, you're an underdog by 13 points?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there like a little side action?
No, this is no.
Like I would say,
if you want it, we do parlay sheets. I'm joking. We don't.
I'm always looking for a little action. That's why I ask. I'm getting 13 points for Steve Flowers.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Anyway, long story longer. So we got that going in this week. A little nervous about that. So let's get to the prediction. What do you got for Cowboys and Giants?
I still, despite having a hard time handicapping what kind of Giants team is going to show up this week, I still like our chances because we still are the better team. Now, we've been struggling a little bit, obviously. What is the line this week? So the Cowboys opened at a 6-point favorite, and now they're down to a 3.5-point favorite. Interesting.
That is. That's very interesting. Wow.
Well, if I'm – I mean, straight up, I'm taking Dallas at 6 points. If I was – if I – early in the week, if I would have seen that the Giants were getting 6 points at home, I probably would have taken them. That's a game I would stay away from in general as a rule of thumb for gambling just because of some of the unknowns surrounding it. But I feel like 6 points at home against, the Cowboys and I don't know, I guess. Sorry, so let's get to the predictions. Let me just stop rambling and making no sense. What's the weather supposed to be like? Is there supposed to be like freezing cold out there by then?
Probably cold.
Any kind of crazy weather that we're unaware of?
I'm not aware of that.
So I'm going to go. I've been calling it all year, and it's never happened. But since you brought it up this week, it's going to happen. Dan Bailey's going to kick a game-winning field goal for us. We're going to win the ball game 24-21.
Wow.
There it is. Wow. I've been saying it every week. I've been asking Dan Bailey to kick a game-winning field goal all year.
I'm going 2 scores, 34-20.
Nice.
I'm going blowout fashion.
I think it's
going
to be closer.
34-20. Bet the house. It's not going to be close.
Interesting.
The Cowboys got this. They will continue to roll on the Giants.
If Dak shows up, I'm with you.
Dak doesn't even have to show up.
I disagree with
you. Not throwing-wise.
I hope you're right. I don't think that we're going to get 4 turnovers again. Do you?
I don't need them. Okay. We'll get a couple. Eli's good for a couple.
I think the game's going to be closer. We still, obviously, I would love a turnover or two. We're not going to get 4.
Here's the deal.
If we do, I think we do win by 2 scores at least. But
I'm
predicting
we knock Eli out of the game.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. All right. So that's who's going to do it?
Lawrence.
Lawrence is going to.
He almost killed Cousins. Did somebody kill Cousins? Did he die?
He's alive.
Okay.
They came close. They had a near-death experience, but
I think he saw the light.
I think he did, too.
All right. Well, that's my prediction. 34-20. I don't know if there's anything else to say. Do we go with, hey, if you're doing some last-minute Christmas shopping, go to cowboyspodcast.com.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's go ahead.
Get on the right-hand side. There's a banner there for Amazon.
Do your shopping through CowboysPodcast.com.
So how this works, folks, if you don't understand how a lot of these things with DraftKings, FanDuel, Amazon, you see these banners up everywhere, it's called affiliate marketing, okay? So what those companies do is they give a little drip, a small percentage of sales that they can track through our website, okay, because it's we're affiliated with them. Give us a little bit of kickback. Keeps the lights on. Sometimes it pays for us to have an intern in here. Sometimes it pays for the producer to actually sit in and do something on the show for us. But, if you're going to do some Christmas shopping, cowboyspodcast.com. Get on the right-hand side. Look for the Amazon banner. Click on that. Takes you right to Amazon. But it will actually count towards sales for us. We'd appreciate that very much. If you're into podcasting, lineupmedia.fm, you can find all your podcasting needs there. We prefer the Dallas Cowboy one or sometimes the St. Louis Cardinal baseball one, which is called Two Birds on a Bat. But if you like other things like conspiracy theories, like you want to see how many bodies that actually turned up dead related to the Clintons, there's something out there, conspiracies. If you like podcasting, there's something on there for you for sure.
All the way back to 1977.
Yeah. Who was that? Somebody at age 26 died, and they were related to the Clinton somehow. But anyway, long story longer. We appreciate you tuning in. Hope you liked the Facebook Live we did during the game. Maybe we'll come back and do that again. I think we got a Sunday night game coming up here in 2 weeks. For Jono, who's not here, hashtag no Jono.
Get
Rodney,
better soon, Jono.
Get better soon. Get well soon, son. For Rodney. For Steve-O, this is the Cowboy Podcast. Looking forward to a big win. See you on Monday. Go, boys.
Go, boys.
Tune in next week for another edition of the Cowboys Podcast on lineupmedia.fm. Subscribe to the show now at cowboyspodcast.com, on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.